Hello, and welcome to Hot Goss with Trash, the podcast where we trade sweet, true facts all around, like they are dirty little pieces of gossip. We rate those facts on a scale of cold to hot, but the thing is, the points don't matter, the ratings don't matter. The only thing that matters on this podcast is that all hosts and every guest is hot. I'm Chloe, and I think that if I had enough money, I would get surgery to be a little taller, I think. If I really had enough expendable income, I would.
Interesting.
Not a factory, just a thought.
Just a thought. I know when you were like, I think, I was like, interesting. It's a think about ourselves.
If you had a little bit more money, would you opt for the additional baller? Okay, great.
My name's Lindsay. I'm good with my height, but one person at school was very jealous because I always got to be in the center of the class photograph, and he really wanted it. And one year we got separated, but he was in a class with someone else who was tall that year, and then we got reunited. He was like, I just want to be in the middle. I was like, James, I will bend. I don't care. Take that middle spot. He's like, it's fine.
Hi, my name's Shem. I'm like average height, but I'm taller than I used to do Brazilian martial arts, and I'm like slightly taller than a lot of the really good people who would do that. And they would always seem to like take joy in like see this big guy here? I want to take him down. And it's like it's unnecessary. Like it's absolutely fine. Like I'm very meek, but I'm like, look how easily he can be toppled. And like, just...
I'm DC, and I am tall. I'm a tall person. One of the best, I don't know if it was a compliment necessarily, but one of the most sort of like effectual things that a friend ever said to me, he was an actor, like he studied acting in college. And so he's very sort of like conscious of his appearance and sort of his posture and all these different things. And one time, and I think it, looking back on it, it might have been, well, I'll just tell you what he said first. He said, I walked into a room and he was like, you don't realize how tall you are, do you? And I was like, oh my God, I don't. And it was like very sort of, you know, I feel like there's something there about sort of like living in your power or your whatever. But also I think it might have just been, thinking back on it, like it might have just been a read of like, how I have bad posture. You know what I mean? Like sort of like, oh, you clearly don't realize how much height you're working with because you're, yeah. That's my fact. That's my tall fact.
That's your tall fact.
If you want, we could split the diff. I don't know how tall you are. I'm not like the shortest, but I would like a cool 5'7".
Oh,
if you have a couple. Okay, our guest today is very tall, but he's humble about it. He's an author. He's a comedian. We're so excited to have him. Please welcome DC Pearson.
Thank you for having me. I should say I'm not that. I'm not like six. I'm not like 6'7". Like
he's the tallest person I've ever seen.
Although I will say, I don't know, Shem, I don't know what your experience is being a tall man, but oftentimes since I'm pretty tall to begin with, then when I'm around a guy, it's usually a guy who's really tall. There suddenly I have like a weird feeling of like, I respect and like him and I need him to like me. Like there's a weird just like caveman thing that happens where I'm just sort of like, oh wow, he's really tall. He'll protect us.
That's we vote for tall politicians more than we vote for short ones. Like that's like literally like a dumb thing in our brain. And like, right. Yeah, I literally look up to very tall people and they're like, oh, wow, you must know what's going on.
Yeah, which is ridiculous, which is so insane.
You can see into the future a little more than me.
Exactly, that's right.
Dang.
You can see slightly over the curvature of the earth. More, you know what's happening like later on in the day than the rest of us.
Man, I can't relate. I'm just going to share my fact. Okay, hopefully I don't know if this is well known. I hope it's not. One of the astronauts on the Apollo 16 mission, Ken Mattingly, basically day two of the trip, he lost his wedding ring in space. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of places it could go. They searched everywhere. They could not find the ring. So they're up in space doing what they got to do. They were on their final spacewalk before taking their trip back to Earth. They were on the walk, like out
out of the spacecraft to do whatever walk they do on the moon or where they are. And as they were walking out, they saw his little tiny gold ring just floating along the same direction. So different astronaut, Charlie Duke, notices it and tries to grab it. He misses it, but him hitting it sends it towards Ken, the owner. It bounced off the back of his head, or wherever on his head, yep, hit the back of Mattingly's head and bounced back where Duke caught it.
Wow.
So he got to go home with his ring.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I thought you were going to say it bounced onto his helmet, shattered it, and then suddenly there's like high pressure air.
Shattered. No, it's just, dang, perfect luck. And good. I mean, bad hands, but then good hands. Dang.
I feel like you're also in space. I think there's, it seems like there's a fair amount of like taking off like big gloves and putting them back on. And like, just this winter was like, I'm rarely ever in a cold place. And I was in a place where it's cold for a couple of weeks, like really cold. And I kept, when I would be outside and I would like have gloves on and then take them off, I lost my wedding ring like 4 times doing that. So I can, I guess what I'm saying is I'm shocked that they even let you do that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you probably like weren't supposed to bring it. I'm almost 100% sure.
Could you imagine getting up there and being like, oh, no.
Like the biggest moment. Well, second biggest moment of my life. And I lost the ring for the first biggest moment.
Oh, I,
I would watch that space movie.
Okay. You, DC, I think you're right. Okay. National hero Alan Shepard, a.k.a. the first American in space, instigated. Wait, no, did I read that wrong? No. He instigated him smuggling his ring on. He wasn't supposed to have it on. And then that man, Alan Shepard, was then the commander on Apollo 14? Huh? Yeah. The mission that he was a commander of took 200 silver medallions into space to then sell them to a person in Philly.
What?
Wait, that guy was such a
lowest grade thing I've ever heard. And how did they miss that? That's amazing.
And because NASA said they smoothed it over because Shepard was the first American in space. So they were like, this is our guy. He's cool. Like, we got to get this, keep it under. But yeah, he smuggled 200 medallions.
And then how did he sell them to Philly? Like, just that these are space medallions.
Sell space. Wait, hold on. I'm going to read the exact sentence. Tell me what it means. He was the commander on the Apollo 14 mission in January 1971 that took 200 silver medallions into space in a financial agreement to sell space with Franklin Mint in Philadelphia. Franklin Mint, I was hoping somebody was like, oh.
Oh, Franklin. Well, I know that the Franklin Mint is like a big like collectors. I feel like you'll see like on late night television, you'll see a fair amount of like, they'll put out like, this is a coin commemorating the like 240th anniversary of America or whatever. And it's like not a real coin. It's not actually worth anything, but it'll be made of like some, and they try to sell you. It's designed to like, for like grandparents who are like, this is a collectible. We got to get this. Like, but, and so I guess he literally did that with them. God. But I just like the idea that it was with some guy in Philly. That's what I was thinking it was.
I think it was some guy called Franklin Mint from Philly.
Hey, it's me, Franklin Mint.
Franklin Mint is the most infomercial sounding guy ever. Like, that's his name.
Hi, I'm Franklin Mint. And has your money been to space?
Mine has.
Oh, dang. Okay, I'm going to fact check myself. I don't know that he instigated it. I think I read it wrong. He instigated the smuggling ring that was the 200 medallions. Because this happened before.
I bet so much has been taken. Like, let's just take this up and then we'll sell it as like, this has been to space.
There's no TSA for astronauts, is what you're
That's
okay.
What I'm saying. When you get back, there's no customs line. They're like, they had to pass a lot of tests.
At least not pre-space 9/11. So it was
what's wild is I was just about to make a space 9/11 joke, and I was like, you can't say that.
You have to keep doing the show. I can just come in. Say something quasi-problematic.
Take your boots off, walk through.
Exactly.
I know I'm taking a lot of space. I'm going to do one more.
Space.
Uh-huh. on Apollo 15, the following mission, that crew smuggled 400 stamps on to sell. The reason they did that is because salaries for astronauts decreased by 1971, and they they were just trying to make money. They were like, these have been in space. Let's sell these stamps.
How much did it decrease?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's not entirely surprising. Like when you watch Apollo 13, like there's a whole big thing at the beginning of that movie. Like nobody cares about space missions anymore. Like it's like, okay, two missions ago, we like went to the moon and we walked on the moon and everybody was super into it. Now we're kind of over it and people are getting like cynical. And so nobody cares. And we're getting like preempted by like a daytime Mets game, or, you know, whatever. So I just like that, like even after Apollo 13, people are like, okay, that was kind of scary because they almost died. And now we're truly fully out of it. And the astronauts are just sort of like bringing just like trinkets into space to resell. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the underneath their space. You guys can't see it, but Chloe just pantomimed wanna buy a watch sort of trench coat move.
Yeah, there's a whole movie about people smuggling like collectible toys into space.
What?
Hidden figures.
No.
Jerk. It was that on Space 9/11, and that was Space 9/11 was taken.
That's fine.
It's too soon for space COVID, so where can I go? Wow.
And I'll say, wow, we can have rings and stamps, but no lesbians in space.
I think they could have got away with a lot more stamps. Like, stamps aren't that big. They could have made a lot more money.
And it's hard to smuggle a lesbian into space.
I've tried. Take me.
As the host of this episode, may I ask you to rate my fact?
Mm-hmm. Chloe, your fact is as hot as one of those, like, erasers that you used to buy at, like, different touristy places that were rainbow colors had it been smuggled into space and then resold on the black market.
Chloe, your fact was as hot as the NASA logo, both an iconic classic and also completely free of copyright. Anyone can use it. You can like slap it on anything. You could smuggle it to space and back. It would be worthless. Like it is no additional value. That's how hot your fact was.
Is the NASA logo really not like trademarked in any way?
Yeah, it's just public domain.
Oh, wow. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I feel like I've seen in the past like 2 weeks, so many people just walking down the street in like a guy in like a NASA sweater.
And you're like, hang on.
Part of me every time is like, there's still a part of me that's like, oh, the guy works for NASA.
Part of me is like, do you have a silver medallion for me?
I will say that fact is as hot as a wedding ring that has just been like freed in the vacuum of space and gets caught in the Earth's atmosphere and then like falls to Earth. Like finally its orbit decays enough that it like streaks down to Earth in, you know, thousands upon thousands of years.
Oh my God, the dinosaurs finally come back.
With T-Rex with a little ring on his finger.
Oh God. Linz, can you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe everyone else here. Could you share the next fact?
I can. You had said it was going to be Shem, but I shouldn't have
Shem. I locked and loaded. I was already like,
Shem
wow,
was ready
okay.
to
well,
go.
I remembered
keeping
I was hosting.
On our toes.
I remembered
okay.
I'm hosting.
What do you want from me?
So my fact is about the Pez candy, which was originally made in Austria in the 1920s. And it was originally made to help people stop smoking. And the name comes from Pfefferminz. The P, the E, and the Z within the word, that's how it got its name. It didn't get sold in a dispenser until the 1930s, and then it didn't make it to the States until the 1950s, where they tried to bring it over with the campaign of helping people stop smoking by like having a mint, and it didn't work, so that's when it became like a fruit flavor candy. But yeah, it was the first anti-smoking aid, I believe.
Wow.
Pez.
Would you like to stop smoking? No. How about sugar? Would you like sugar? Oh, we love it. Yeah.
You have an addictive personality? Great. This will work.
Can you make...
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to say that it also was like like Batman. That's where Batman is from. It was just like a head on the dispenser of the anti-smoking, like scary Australian woods, half man, half bat. Like, because I just remember like Pez dispensers. I just so associate with, like, I think I had a Batman one. Just eating so much candy out of Batman's neck, and then eventually you were just like, I don't know if this was y'all's experience, but like if you had a Pez dispenser as a kid and you had all, like, you had some Pez to reload it with. Sometimes you would just like unroll them and be like, I'm not putting them in the dispenser. And they're being dispensed into my mouth.
Fully, yeah, because if you ate like three or four in one go, like they were more like fizzy then, like in a like a sherbet-y way. So I was like, let's get that Pez hit.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a total of a full force multiplier thing where you're just like, I think as a kid, it's important to, my wife and I were talking about this the other night with M&Ms, where you would just like put a ton of M&Ms in your mouth and then just kind of let them structurally sort of break down. Over, like, where there is a weird thing where it's just sort of like, you get a weird, like, it's like one or two candies individually behave totally differently than like 19 of them if you cram them in your mouth.
Nothing can stop people from smoking, right? It's like they have these like huge packets that say this will kill you.
What's because I looked up a few different sites to like bring in all the facts about this fact, and one of them was comparing it to vaping, and it was like, but one of these is more dangerous for your health than the other. I was like, I think you mean vaping, but sugar's also pretty bad. And it was like a line by line comparison of Pez versus vaping. I was like, this is a bad story.
What? Who's out there being like, should I vape or should I do Pez?
I'm not gonna, I mean, if I have a little Pez with Batman's head on in the club, am I gonna look as cool as if I vape? Maybe I'll look cooler. Maybe that's it.
Okay, wait, hold on. Lindsay, you've cracked it. Pez vapes? Are you kidding me? They have to get on this.
Oh my God. They have to get on it. That would be beautiful.
Just sucking Batman's face and getting like a hit.
Everyone wants that. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm shocked at, like, because during the height of the pandemic, I'd seen everyone, like, have all these concerns about respiratory ailments and then, like, suck down on, like, huge pipes of tobacco and be like, they're connected. It's like, well, nothing will stop it. It's a powerful industry. We thank them.
Yeah, you guys are also sponsored by Philip Morris, right? We should say this podcast is brought to you by.
Yeah, is this we originally
the
started
American tobacco industry.
At the end of each show, we rewatch "I Love You, Philip Morris," Jim Carrey's finest.
Yeah.
To explicitly answer your question, Shem, no, I don't think anything will stop people from smoking. No, it can't. At this point, no. No.
Okay, that was the fourth note.
No.
Message is slowly sinking in. All right, well, we're doomed.
No.
I wonder if anyone like has rigged up a little Pez dispenser to like dispense little cigarettes as a very fuck cute, or even like one of those little candy cigarettes that like kids
have. Oh yeah,
that
would be cute. Oh, those are cute. Those candy cigarettes were good. I would take that over a cigarette, but then I don't smoke, so.
Did you have those little like white sticks that you could like?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah,
totally. Pure sugar. But they just like had like a little like powdered, like not very good tasting like sugar powder that you could sort of puff out of it. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I liked, like, again in terms of just like pure sugar, those tubes that were just like gel. Did you have that, or did y'all have?
No,
it was truly just a sugar tube. It would be like green apple flavored, and it would be like a toothpaste sized tube of just like gel.
Yes,
that was like sour candy. Or like,
yes, I do remember these. Yeah, where it was. Yeah, they had like, I associate them with gum for some reason, even though they weren't gum. Like it was, I think maybe I had like a bubble gum flavored one time, and it was literally exactly. It was just, they were just like, hey kids, fuck you. Yeah. This is just sugar gel. Yeah, I remember them.
Sugar gel. That is
We used to have like licorice and sherbet, which is like a big like black stick of licorice, and then inside is like sherbet, which is like powdery sugar, but it looks just like cocaine does in the movies. So it's perfect for like dipping your finger in and like doing like this kind of stuff, and like which every child would like do and then go, it's pure stuff, and then like act out all your cop fantasies. It was very exciting.
licorice Scarface coming to the playground near you.
Linz, your fact, I gotta say, it's as hot as Poison Ivy would be if she had her own Pez dispenser. And as hot as she is not as a Pez dispenser.
Yeah. Thank you. They, oh, I also found out they get a lot of requests for like specific heads, like for people to have like them individually made, but they turn them all down, including Kim Kardashian.
Whoa.
All of them?
That's what the, that's what I read. Just Batman. Just Batman. He walked in and they were like, we'll make yours.
Kim Kardashian would be like, if you made like a yeah. booty shaped Pez dispenser, that would break the internet.
I was going to say, that feels like something that is, yeah, right. That feels like something that is definitely going to change though. Like one, right. like old man Pez is going to die and then his children are going to take over. First of all, Succession season 3, just completely just do it. But it's within the Pez dynasty and then start having like, yeah, Travis Scott Pez dispenser, BTS Pez dispensers. Like that would, they're missing out on, I feel like on just so much revenue because right. Pez's are cheap to make.
So
but then
cheap.
If you had them and you're like, this is, we're only doing a run of like 50,000. Mm-hmm. This guy, we cracked it. This yeah. is like, oh they're God. Missing out on that. Like Funkos have to be so much more expensive right. to make and they don't even have candy in them.
Yeah. Is a Pez shaped like the late Mr. Pez? It's very tastefully done. That's what he didn't want. But
little teeny tiny compressed bricks of his ashes are inside.
That's what I'm imagining his coffin is just a long thin tube with a picture of his head on the top. please, Mr. Pez, when you go.
Yeah, I think your fact was as hot as my mouth when I'm trying to say like
pfefferminz.
Anytime I have to like tackle the PF German like compound like fans for like Glühwein, when you get the fans, the cups in them, I'm like it all goes horribly wrong. My German's very bad. But yeah, das ist heiß.
Dankeschön.
Do you guys both know German?
I know German. Like, I'm not fluent. Wow. I studied it till I was 18, and I've been trying to brush it up a little during the pandemic. Because
I thought
just,
you were
like...
going to say, I've been trying to, like, get rid of it.
goodbye. Trust me, I'm still there. No, I really like it as a language. And it's like, yeah, fun. Like, I like all the compound words when they, like, put them together. Like, it's really...
Weltanschauung. Mm-hmm. We got like, I got sent to like teach improv in Germany in like a little town.
Not sent to? It's meant to sound like it was punishment. Like I was exiled to a prison colony
yeah.
to teach improv in Germany.
Karl von Schem, I want to learn the improv again.
Yeah.
Sent him here.
Yeah, that's your punishment teaching German comedy. But yeah, it was wild because like I took, Lindsay came with me. So like she was doing all the speaking and I was like catching every other word. And it was like, I don't know. I still don't know what kleiner means. I think it's small. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very exciting. And then Lindsay speaks like really good French. My French is also very bad. So like I just hang out.
Spanish, I'm coming for you next. Which would be more useful.
Did Germans have a particular, like, were there a lot of the same kinds of scenes that you get that they would do over and over again, or just things that they seem sort of obsessed with? Like
Willkommen zu Olive Garden.
really?
No. Oh my God. That's like the most common scene I've seen in the States. No.
Sure. Oh, it's... like, so I went around Europe, like, teaching improv in, like, different countries, like, the Swedish and, like, that the... I mean, you're the only person who thinks that's cool. that's normally, like, it's just a real, like, sad low point in my career. But, yeah, like, German scenes weren't as... English scenes tend to be, like, very goofy and wacky. American scenes are, like, very, like, emotionally connected. And, like, at the end of a scene, like, everyone's in love or, like, something like that. Or it's very, like, in, like, IO style, like, everyone's, like, very relationship-y and focused. Right, yeah. And then... German scenes were a little bit more like not serious as in like not comedic but like high theater or drama or like acting and like it's very much like grounded in a more theatrical tradition, which was like nice and fun, but like opening them up to the idea of like more playfulness was like interesting, or like they found that very exciting and they did that.
So yeah, that's interesting. I don't even know what to expect, but it's just so neat. I think it's neat, especially because, you know, in America we're just sort of, it's like, you maybe it's like, and then I went and taught in New Mexico. It's just like, yeah, it's the same people, the same reference base, and it's sort of like, that's cool on the one hand but I do think like there's really something to, like, I read this book one time about Arthur Miller going to direct a production of Death of a Salesman in China. And it was in like the 50s. And so it was also like China was completely, completely different to where it is now, and was even, you know, even more, it's obviously still very rural in a lot of parts, but even more sort of rural and agrarian, and just sort of like having to adapt the different stuff, where he was just like, this is so American. Like all the stuff, all the ideas I'm playing with are so, and like the role of the father and the whatever. So all that stuff, when you sort of like find these weird little ways to see inside a different country or a different culture's kind of like their values or their whatever through just like doing goofy stuff on stage. I just think that's so cool.
Oh, I mean, you're the only person who will appreciate this, but I once watched a Full Harold in Estonian and it was nuts, because like you could fully see, oh, that's your opening, okay, I see what you're putting from like there. I could like tell when the second beats were happening, and then by the end, like, they had like a really fun like third beat connection, and I was like, oh, that's from there, and that's that person, and like could fully like track it, even though I don't speak a word of Estonian. Like, it was so interesting how like ingrained like some of that language is.
That's so cool. Yeah, where you're just sort of like the rhythms of it. And it is just, and were they also a little bit like in Estonian, were they like, yeah, Harold kind of sucks?
No, they,
like, I mean, like, this is great to learn, but this is like, we're in Estonia, we're ready to like move on.
They were so excited by it. There was
that's
like,
awesome. Oh, that's so cool.
If you go around parts of Europe, they're just still so excited by like things like improv or like that way of doing it, or like long form scenes. They're like, it's like truly still magic. And the real audience was like, come and watch and go, how? We did like a show in a small town in Sweden, huge like crowd came in, and like we did like a mono scene that went like really, really well. We like headlined or whatever, and then at the end, one of the other improvisers came and like, how did you do that? Like, you knew you're going to be in the hospital at the start, obviously, and the characters you play, but like, how did you do that? And I was like, we're all it's nuts. But yeah, it's nice.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, okay, then Lindsay, I will say that your act was as hot as the crowd at a Swedish Harold. Their first time seeing a like level one Harold. They're back in there. They're ready to laugh. The crowd is hot.
It's the hottest song we've had yet.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's beautiful. There's just like Super Bowl style parade after. Just like, oh, yes! Yes! Wow. Right. Cars are burning.
Scene, the doctor came back in the last scene. Amazing.
Keep celebrating, please, while we take a break and hear from my friends. Thank you, friends. We're back. I hope you celebrated the whole time, and we're so freaking excited. Our next fact is going to come from DC.
All right, my fact is, there's going to be an awkward pause here while I pull it up, because I have it, and it's something that I just know. Like, this is like a go-to sort of, I'm genuinely like, this is the coolest thing. And it's not that cool, but it's cool to me. And it was like, I was on a road trip once with my wife, and we were listening to this song. Do you guys know the song Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. I was in the shower before this being like, God damn it, if they don't know this song, this is going to be a slog. Okay, so that's great. So,
I don't listen to music, Carl.
So originally, there was this song by Suzanne Vega where it was like not even a huge song of hers, but it was like this, it's basically a cappella. I think the original version of it is literally just her singing that thing, and then there was a remix of it and a couple years later, and then that became the really big hit that everybody knows, that sort of has a kind of like early 90s kind of house music, cool chill kind of vibe. Great song, great. And the remix of it is by DNA, which is like the version that everybody knows. So there's a couple of interesting things about this song. I'll do a main interesting fact and then an interesting bonus fact, or actually there's a couple of them. We'll see how deep we want to get into this. But so that song, basically in that song, it's about like this person who's sitting at a diner, and it's just very sort of like, you're in the moment, and I see somebody come in, and then the guy looks up from his newspaper, and I'm just seeing this sort of scene at this diner, and it's very kind of like meditative and whatever. So the it's literally based on an experience that Suzanne Vega had being at a diner in Manhattan, like some morning in the like early 80s. And she was just sitting at the diner, whatever. And she watches this different stuff happen and kind of, and she's reading something in the newspaper. And she's like, there's the story of an actor who died because he was drinking or whatever. And so all of that, basically people got obsessed with this song and they got obsessed with this idea that like, oh, this really happened. This is an experience that she really had, even though, and I didn't know this until I was rereading the article about the song. It's, I guess, written from a male perspective, which I never knew. I don't know if Tom is supposed to be the guy that owns the diner or if he's like the guy sitting in the diner. But anyway, it's based on something that actually happened to her, which was like not much. She was literally just sitting in the diner and wrote the song. So people got obsessed with like, this really happened and we're going to figure out the exact date that it happened. Because in the song, she says, there's this, we know it's in the early 80s. And she says, I was reading the paper and there was the story of an actor. So like, okay, it's probably the New York Times. And they went and they looked and they found, okay, this is this actor who died when he was drinking. And it was like, oh, okay, so it's probably this actor, William Holden, because we found his obituary in the paper and it said that he had like, you know, basically fallen down the stairs or whatever. And he was known, I guess, to be a drinker or whatever. I don't know, allegedly, I don't want to get sued by the William Holden estate. So people were like, that's it. We think it's that's it. And so we know the morning that the events of this song happened. And then later on, years later, she would like confirm like, yes, that was the person that I was talking about, whatever. So there's that. But the really interesting thing to me anyway is that, and I don't know exactly how this was confirmed, whether people figured it out or she acknowledged it, the diner that she was sitting in is called, let me see here, sorry, one second, original version. So here, this answers my question from before. It's literally called Tom's Restaurant. And if you were to see it, you would recognize the sign, not the Tom's part of it, but it's usually cropped a little tighter. And that's because it's used as the establishing shot of Monk's Diner in Seinfeld. Like the diner that they go to in like every single episode of Seinfeld. Uh-huh. It's like a super famous, just very New York looking sign. So that actual restaurant is also the restaurant from the song Tom's Diner. Like that's like the actual song. That's the diner from that. So I think it's cool. I don't know. That became Monk's Cafe. So that's actually my sort of like main fact. But even more bonus fact beyond that, when there was that, I think it was the remix of it. So people figured it out and they got obsessed with the song and they whatever. So on top of all of the other allegedly interesting stuff about this song, it was revealed years later that the inventor of the MP3 music format, that was the first song that he used to test whether the MP3 file format would work, because he was like, it's this beautiful song and she has this great like a cappella whatever voice, and I want to like see if I can translate that warm tone but still have it be the thing that was revolutionary at MP3s is they were super duper it was like you could get a lot of information and make the song still sound really good, but in a very like compressed file format. And that's what led to like file sharing and Napster and allowed all that stuff to happen. So the first song ever to be made into an MP3 successfully was, I think, the original Tom's Diner. So to me, the song is like the most interesting song in the world, because there's all this like weird, crazy, different stuff about it. It feels like one of those magical things that like just weird connections are always like happening to this song. So, as it says in the Wikipedia article, among audio engineers, this anecdote has earned Vega the informal title, the mother of the MP3.
So that's dang. That's wow, that's beautiful. I love that.
When I first moved to New York, I did cycle all the way up to Tom's Diner just because it is like the Seinfeld diner. So it's like just, and like you don't go inside or anything. You just like walk aside and go, oh yeah, that was the interstitial bumper that you use between scenes. And you just keep going. But it's like, oh, it's magic. It's like the movies.
That must happen to them all the time, because it's like not, I'm assuming it's like not anything like the interior of the diner that was like on a set in Burbank.
They capitalize on it a bunch. Like it is like, there's all these signs like, oh, the Seinfeld restaurant. But it does just look like it still. Like it's great.
There's a Tom's Diner in Brooklyn, and I walked past it the other day, and someone was like, yeah, this is the Tom's Diner from the song. And
from Seinfeld. I was like, you need to go into Manhattan. I was like, I won't tell them because I think they're trying to impress this person that they're with. And I was like, you're in the wrong part of town.
Just send them this podcast. Yeah. Just send them this episode like very passive-aggressively.
Yeah. I would love if the people in Brooklyn were trying to capitalize on it.
Yeah, and like I send all my friends, it's like, oh, I'm in America. It's very- I made it.
I do, like, I didn't know it was true. I love that these people were like, who died?
Yeah.
Let's play detectives.
Yeah. Right. It's so neat. For some reason, I just love that, that people were like, and also it even says in the Wikipedia article, they were like, well, and they looked in the song, it says it was raining, but on that morning, it was only overcast. It didn't actually rain. And then later, Suzanne Begg was like, yeah, I played that up for the song. I said it was rainy.
I didn't think anyone would call me out on that. Okay,
yeah.
She really captured something. Those people like, we got to find out the truth.
Wait till they hear Luca. It's like a whole other investigative.
Oh, God.
Okay, so there's only so many second form based police accounts we have. Yeah, no. I love stuff like that when people like dig into songs for like no real reason, but they like, get really into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, oh, what other newspaper songs are there? Are people like, I gotta find out what those 5,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire were in the Beatles song.
It's the most British reference of all time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm just happy I get it. I don't know what they were. When
I don't know. I never, I think because I heard it as a child, I was like, ooh, weird. And then as an adult, I've never checked.
As a fan of like British, like, you know, like the like British invasion music and like punk stuff growing up, I feel like the thing that it took me the longest to even though we had the internet to like be like, what the fuck is that? Is a budgie. I feel like literally every song that came out of England from like 1960 to like 1980 like references a budgie for some reason. And I was just like, oh cool, yeah, totally. Like in that in The Magnificent Seven by The Clash, where it's like vacuum cleaner sucks up budgie, where I was just like, cool, man. Dope. This is awesome. I love this. But I feel like I had no idea what it was.
I guess they called the budgie.
It's a canary, right?
Yeah, like a budgerigar.
A budgerigar.
Mm. Oh.
So it's abbreviated to budgie.
Oh, I did not know that. See, bonus, even more bonus facts.
Fun
facts. Facts upon fact.
When the Treasury decides the budget for the year, it is also sometimes referred to as the budgie. So, yeah, if they're talking about the budget, the government budgie, they're talking about the budget.
That's adorable. That's so wonderful and adorable. And I'm sure something that is completely horrible.
Oh, it's the most charming way to cut healthcare services.
Ooh, the budgie. I'm sorry.
No more nurses in the budgie.
It's not our fault. The budgie said to do it. yeah.
I'm sure there have to have been some BBC commentary that started like on the radio that started with like the budgie in the coal mine or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there was some sort of, yeah, right. Oh man, that was the best. I used to love growing up listening to NPR, like my parents would listen to NPR in the car on the way home. And it would always be sort of like, okay, there's like All Things Considered and all these like American NPR news shows. And then I feel like at 6 o'clock, they would have like the BBC, like world news. And it was always just like, they were always just like, we'll take it from here, NPR. We're actual fucking serious adult journalists. Like they were always just so intensely like, today in the West Bank. And you were just like, oh fuck, shit. You know, like we gotta, this is real. This is real.
Now. Is the BBC. Like, listen up, bitches.
Well, you'll like this, and only you again. This is a very personalized episode. I'm just going to email you this MP3.
Yeah, please do.
But my old Harold team, when I was back in London, one of the women there used to work for the BBC in the news department. So our rehearsal space was inside the BBC, like, World Services, like, offices. So you'd have to, like, sign in with, like, a proper BBC badge. Then you'd walk through the news floor that you'd see on, like, News 24. Oh, yeah. Then you'd walk through all the radio offices and you'd see people, like, on Pro Tools editing the news and, like doing real work. And then she'd take us into this room that was, like, this big, like, sort of like an old fusty, like any scene from like The Kingsman. So like a big, like fusty, like round table room with all these portraits of like governors of the BBC for years. And then we'd like, you know, do scenes. But yeah, it was like the wildest place to like, it's like, yeah, I'm doing comedy at the BBC. I mean,
I just love imagining that like somebody's in a recording booth trying to be like, today at 10 Downing Street, what? And then you just hear through the wall, it's like, oh, my car is too big. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever. My dentist, you're crazy. Or, you know,
like, world service, banana. Yeah.
This podcast is this episode is exclusively for people that like paid way too much money for lessons.
Has a lot of them, so it's big of
them out there. The fucking the Venn diagram for podcast listeners and those people. Yes. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. A few peripheral people going, should I take an improv lesson? No.
No. We're good. We have herd immunity improv knowledge in the podcast listenership. Like, we're good. We have like 80%. It's fine. You're good. You're covered.
Such a beautiful image.
Whew. Wow. Do you see that fact is hot? Just as hot as she's writing her song. Everything's happening. She's there the morning. She hasn't written it yet. She's just experienced it reading the newspaper. In the back, there was a chef burning toast and another chef burning bacon. For no reason. They were just having a bad day. They didn't take it off the grill. They let it sizzle forever until it was just like, fuck, that's like ashes. What the fuck have we done? We can't serve this. Your fact is as hot as those ashes.
Thank you.
Why hot is the hottest heat?
It's white, so hot that the chefs forgot they were cooking it and it combusted.
DC, your fact is as hot as a fresh pot of Dyna coffee when they pour it out and you're like, I wanna, but I can't. And I see that steam coming up.
Thank you. Hot? Yeah, the kind of hot that it is for like 32 minutes and then it's like drinkable temperature for like 23 seconds and then it's way too cold.
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that.
DC, that fact was as hot as the 90s trend of taking a song and then remixing it with like a house music.
Yeah.
Like the doom, 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 like that very like basic beat, but like yes. It was.
And then like, just having like a beautiful ripped bald man in the video. Just, like,
always.
Kind of like, for no reason, where you're just like a little bit like, is he the guy? Like,
is he not the guy?
No. Just no. Super not the guy.
Is he in the band? He's not in the band. No, he's not in the band either.
Just dancers shaving their heads. Get me in the next video.
I think that trend ended with the Beastie Boys Body Moving Fat Boy Slim remix. I think that was the last like big remix of a song, which was like so good that like I think that's a version, that's the official version of that song in my head now. Like, that's how good that remix was. And then I don't think that people do it again. So, like, get on it.
Get on it.
Get on it.
Get back. I mean, Fatboy Slim has got to be coming back soon, right? Because the 2000s are super back. So I feel like it's only a matter of time before, like, Fatboy Slim is, like some new artist, I feel like, will be, like, it'll, you know, it'll be, like, some SoundCloud rapper X, Fatboy Slim.
Last...
Or do I have to come up with all the good ideas? I guess I do.
Fatboy Slim's last release was in October the 1st, 2021.
There we go.
Which is
two days ago.
Tell me it wasn't like, I feel like with, especially for whatever reason, with British artists, and I can say this because for the most part, the British public seems to be like, yeah, we'll get the vaccine. We'll do what, like, we're down. We get it. For the most part, like, every, like, 50-50, if a legacy British artist has come out with a song in the past 2 years, it's been like, masks off, stupid, you're a sheep. You know what I mean? Like, it's for whatever, it's like Van Morrison and Eric Clapton. Just in the studio, like, yeah, man, I'm not taking AstraZeneca. Oh, I'm dead. You know, like, why is that? I don't know. It sucks.
Pfizer, you are not what I need. Pfizer.
and that's playing over a, like in Goodfellas, like that's playing over a like montage of like people that would have lived but didn't take the vaccine because of this all. I take my health advice from Van Morrison for some reason and Eric Clapton. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm gonna put it on the record. He has the voice of an angel. Shem, could you give us the next fact?
I literally wrote a sketch that was like a We Are the World type parody, but it had lots of like old British celebrities doing like a don't take the vaccine and like all those like going around the world doing them. And I was like, oh yeah, Why didn't I do that? It's like, because I couldn't be bothered to write the music for it. Like, I picked up a guitar and it's like, ah, oh, who cares? Like, move on.
Yeah, I feel like that's so many sketch ideas where I'll be like, oh yeah, that would be really good. And then as long as somebody comes in and writes like genuinely amazing music, does it like for free and records it because I don't know how, that then this will be great. And then it's just like, yeah, I'm not going to ask somebody to do that. I might have to ask them to help me move at some point.
So functional help.
Yeah. But staying on the musical theme, scientists are baffled by the fact that fire can be extinguished with sound. So they've been an Irish scientist in 1857 had like flames and was singing at them, and then the singing would reduce the fire or extinguish it completely in some cases. And then they've been like experimenting working in it, and there's some theory about sound is vibration, the waves going through the air like penetrate, there's an ideal gas law where temperature, pressure, and volume are all interrelated like a little triangle. And there's a point in volume that can reduce the temperature enough to like extinguish a fire. So to test that, in 2004, some scientists at the University of West Georgia put some like candles around, put three bass speakers in like a little circle around them, and then played Canadian rock band Nickelback's How You Remind Me at the candle. And then within 10 seconds, the candle was like, nope, I can't. And like was extinguished. So yeah.
I mean, I use singing to put out conflict within families. I use it as a child. I still don't
really. Also Nickelback.
I remember my dad and his mom arguing one Christmas dinner. I was like, oh, I don't like this. So I just started really loudly singing songs from Mary Poppins. And that put out the fire there, too. It works with arguments.
You've never loved me. I'm taking the kids. I'm believing you in the eye.
Truly, singing puts out all kinds of fire. Oh. I love they picked Nickelback. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, all totally. Right, what should we do?
I felt like that was
it
like.
It feels like they were. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I feel like obviously it was intentional, but I feel like being like, Nick, we're gonna do Nickelback.
Was like intentional.
It's them being like, I sense a little CNN article coming. A little interesting headline here. It's like total headline bait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if they would have done like Vivaldi, like right. Yeah, whatever, fucking who cares? Okay. But they were like Nickelback puts out, they were just truly just like, we're shooting for like late night monologue joke. Yeah. Right. Like, just setting that up. This is literally where the premise laboratory at the University of West Georgia.
They're like, if only Smash Mouth had been invented, we'd use that. But
I love that there's scientists who are like, all right, we can make the late night monologues if we tweak our research right. That's beautiful.
Yeah, there's a formula for Leno. Yeah. And you can calibrate it. Yeah.
Why are you doing this research paper? You know why.
Music stops dance. That'll get on fucking Corden.
completely unrelated, but related to the Leno thing reminded me of it. I've seen multiple, like in one case, a very close friend, and then another case, somebody who I just like follow on social media. In LA, people, for some reason in the past few weeks, have been just like encountering Jay Leno like with their kids. So I've just seen so many people, like the first one was my friend sent me a picture of their 2-year-old like just with Jay Leno, and Jay's like super up in her face, just like and he's like wearing denim, which is, you know, is his whole thing. And they just were like, yeah, we were at a car show, and because they were like a friend of like a, you know, somebody that we know runs this car show, not like they're super into cars, but like, yeah, we'll go, it's something to do on a Sunday with the kid. And then they were like, Jay Leno was just at this car show, which is so funny because it's just like the most, again, on brand thing for him because he like loves classic cars. But it was just like, can you imagine if you're him being like, yeah, I'm gonna go see some cars? It's like he must be so over it by now. But he was there, and they were like, then we asked him, can you take a picture with our kid? And he did. And then like this, I think even this weekend, I saw another person in LA was like in their car, and Jay Leno's in like the next car over at like a stoplight or something. And it's a picture of their kid like reaching out to Jay Leno. And Jay Leno like, he's like giving a thumbs up. So he's just out there like taking, if you got a kid and you want a picture with Jay
Leno.
Kids,
cars, Leno.
Just, like, the street. Yeah, exactly. News you can use.
I feel like, what's the, if, it's just children in the wild getting pictures with Jay Leno.
Yes, instead of comedians. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much. I couldn't get there on my own.
That's a comedian with cars, folks. Yes.
Thank you, thank you.
I got
you. Teamwork, baby.
Improv training. Listening.
That was all they were researching. Sound is like magical, and like all the like different things you can do with sound particles, and also fire is very exciting. That's not a fact, it's just a thing. I'm very excited by just fire and the way it like moves between like air, but like all the different things that you can use to like extinguish fire. I was reading about like the history of napalm and like how it like will burn like extra bright in an actually good Malcolm Gladwell book, The Bomber Mafia, where he like talks about the invention of napalm and how it was like a weird like technical challenge, and like, oh, we've got fire that you couldn't extinguish, like as like a thought experiment that turned into like a nightmare. But yeah, like fire is great.
Yeah, this is why just asking questions is so dangerous, because like one second you're sitting there just like getting stoned with your friends being like, could fire burn so hot that it could never be extinguished, and the next thing you know you're like at Dow Chemical in like 1959 just being like, okay, we've invented this thing that is, we're just gonna like drop over colonialized people in Vietnam. I don't know, there's no punchline here.
Oh, no, you just only get stoned with dumb people, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, could my cuddly toy really fly? Like, okay, we're in safe territory. Yes. We're safe here.
What if a mushroom was like a bomb? It's like, get out.
Get out.
Or that was Mario. I don't know.
Right. Wow, it can just...
Ideal blunt rotation, Mario.
Mario's more of a pipe guy. Great.
Great, Shem. That.
So when I tell a joke like that, DC laughs, and then you two like just go, ugh. But then DC like mutes his microphone so I can listen to it.
I mean, I can't be laughing at this thing too much.
I have a reputation to maintain.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to jump in and say Shem that, because that's the most obvious one. So I'm just going to cannibalize it before anybody else can get there and say Shem that is as hot as as fire that could not be extinguished by sound. It's soundproof. It's hotter than soundproof fire that has yet to be invented.
Dankeschön.
Shem. Your fact is as hot as whatever is in that fucking photograph Nickelback has. I don't know if it's like a love photograph or it's a nude, but I hope it's the latter.
Well, it also makes him laugh.
That's, yeah, maybe it is a nude, you know?
Wow, you remember more about Nickelback than I do.
Yeah, I know, because I was going to make a better joke, but I was like, look at that photograph, and then what? Thank you.
Also, the crazy thing about Nickelback is... That album, they just like came out with that album, and then they were like, I think they're still together, but like they truly were just like, that album was so successful that they like didn't make another one for I'm sure they have by now, and it's probably like an anti-mask anthem, or maybe not. I don't know, maybe they're I don't mean to generalize.
Last album was released May 21st, 2021.
All right, everybody's having a very active year. Nickelback was trying to get in on that wave of artists being like, okay, the vaccines are coming out. This is going to be like a summer where people are just partying.
Here we go.
And they're going to need a new Nickelback.
It's a summer of concerts, baby. They're going to need us.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like they all, like, artists who hadn't recorded for a while got 3 months into the pandemic, and then one of them sent an email being like, do you maybe want to get together and record something?
Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
She's like, do you guys get asked to do Imagine? No. Do you guys want to do something? Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck them. Yeah,
fuck those guys. Fuck Kristen Wiig. Suck my ass, Kristen Wiig.
Well, the harm that video caused.
That brought Nickelback.
Sure. Your fact is as hot as Prodigy's Firestarter.
Wow.
R.I.P. Keith Flint.
Yes. A dancer. Like, Prodigy is just one guy. That's my favorite, like, fact about them, is it's just, like, Liam on, like, the synthesizers, and then the rest of them are just dancers, and Liam is barely in the video. It's like,
yeah!
Yeah, oh,
it's nice.
And after, like, four albums, he's like, oh, do you want to, like, sing a song, or, like, do a song? And they're like, yeah, okay. But he just was like, I can't have a bunch of people watching me press keys in an Atari 1040 SDE. Like, I need, like, some backup on it. Mm-hmm. And then that's, everyone thought they were like a band, and I was like, nah, he's my dude. He like knows how to sequence in Cubase. It's like,
and then put on a show.
Mm-hmm. More EDM acts and electronic and whatever, and DJs should just truly have like four other people in the act that are just like, there's the balloon guy in the place. And it's not it's not just sort of like they're like, oh, they're on the payroll, and like if you come to my show, they'll be doing their thing. It's like they should be like in the band, like truly.
So there's a whole tradition in like 90s British like indie music of like just a tambourine guy or like a guy in maracas, like on Happy Monday. Yeah, that move you did is Bez. Yes, it's 100% Bez. But there's like lesser bands would have their Bezes, or like people on stage who just like hang out and like just do stuff. But then also if you go to like modern rap concerts, there's like 30 people on stage, one guy rapping, one guy playing the sounds, and then just guys like hanging out. Yes. And that's the biggest and maybe only crossover between modern day trap music and the 90s day Bez, Happy Mondays.
Is Bez. Bez will just go in there and do like the last line of every song.
Especially if it's the N word.
Every line, yeah.
I hate to get serious right now, but you see, we need you to do something for us right now.
Okay, you got it.
Thank you so much. As our guest today, we're going to need you to pick the hottest fact.
Oh my god.
We're going to recap and you can pick your own. We 100% think you can. You should. Okay. If you think it is the hottest one, people have done it before. Uh-huh. They'll do it again. Mm-hmm. You should if you feel so inclined. Okay, to recap. The wedding ring in space.
Mm-hmm. Pez was an anti-smoking device.
I'm the fire stopper, twisted fire stopper.
And Tom's Diner. I guess I have to pick one of the many Tom's Diner fact.
No. Facts. It can be the all.
Tom's Diner was the diner that was written about is also the exterior for Monk's Diner from Seinfeld. It was it's talking about William Holden. It was the original MP3 song. I have to pick, just for sheer visualness and being able to imagine the sort of scene of it and how surreal that must have been, and maybe also just because I heard it first, so it was like first in, but Chloe, I think I gotta go with the wedding ring in space, also because then that led to us discovering a whole like black like flea market of just like shitty commemorative things that have technically been in space or maybe not. And just imagining now if you go to Philly, I'll bet like everybody who's like 62 is like, well, yeah, my dad got me this thing that was in space. Yes. I still wear it. It's like, there's no way. It took 200 of them, and somehow 20,000 people had them.
It's like, a space piece of the Berlin Wall.
Yes.
That exists for sure.
Dang. Thank you so much. Do you see, where can people find you? Where can they listen to you? Where can they see you? Where can they stalk you physically or online?
Yes, they can find me and engage with me in a non-stalkery, healthy way. And then I'll tell them where they can stalk me. No, DCPearson, twitter.com/DCPearson. And then my Instagram is DEECEE Pearson. The Twitter is mostly jokes. The Instagram is mostly food photographs. And those are the main places to find me. And then I wrote two books. One is called The Boy Who Couldn't Sleep and Never Had To. And the other one is called Crap Kingdom. And I recommend them for anybody that likes sort of maybe science fiction, fantasy, coming of age type stuff. And then Crap Kingdom is a young adult novel. So if there's a young adult in your life who you're trying to get a gift for that's like funny, but also interesting and fantastical, and they like that kind of stuff, you maybe get that for them for the holidays. And also just a general note, if you buy books for people for the holidays, I really like getting books for people for presents. Order them now because the supply chain is really screwed up, and literally every author in my timeline is like, you please order now, especially if you just see a book that's like coming out, like get it now, even if you want to just get it for yourself, like pre-order it, do all that stuff. It always helps. But right now, literally, if you wanted to get here anywhere near because Christmas or the holidays, like you order it now because it literally, like they're literally just have pages flying around and like, okay, we just have one tube of glue to like tape to like get the pages together. Like it seems insane. And then also the US Postal Service is for shit. So order now, I guess. Any not even just my book, any book.
Well, you can say that. We will say only order his book.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's what I was really setting up.
At a local bookstore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. This was delightful and interesting, you know, genuinely interesting.
This was so fun. I've learned so much about Tom Steiner. I have to go listen to the song because I'm not sure it's the one I'm thinking of. And I've been
this would be hilarious if you go, you're like, oh yeah, that song, that's interesting. You
sweet, play, yeah,
you're
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I was like, thinking of Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater. Like, what was I doing?
I was just the landslide. It's not that one.
Dude, okay, no, but Chloe, here's the thing. Interesting fact about that. I mean, not that interesting, but it's just like, to me, it completely reset my whole that song is that she wrote that when she was like 18. Like it was not like she had that song going into Fleetwood Mac, because Fleetwood Mac had been around for a really long time. Like that, everything about that song feels like it's sort of like after you've like lived a life and you've whatever and you're looking back on all these, and it was literally just like she was like really young, like she was like early college age, I think, when she wrote Landslide, which is just like a testament to how insanely talented Stevie Nicks is. Also, Stevie Nicks is from Phoenix, where I'm from, so I feel an extra layer of like proprietariness. And that's also where you can't see it, but I'm wearing just so many flowing gypsy.
I was gonna ask about your rings. I didn't want to like bring up so many rings.
They've all been to space.
Wow. Our fourth co-host, Rachel, is also from Arizona, which is why she couldn't be here. Like, there's too much, like, energy for one.
too much cactus.
Too much cactus. As always, We Are Trash Comedy. You can find us on Instagram at We Are Trash Comedy. You can find us on Twitter at We Are, with the letter R, Trash Comedy. You can DM us. You can email us. You can call us at a number I don't know. Does it?
That's it.
That's it. Thank you, DC, again.
Thanks for having me.
Love you, everyone. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting